Good morning, everybody. This is Victoria, and I'm reading for you today, which is Friday, August 11th. We're looking at the News Gazette. On page one, Obana pleads for the override of Rauner's veto. By Tom Kacich. Governor's changes harmful to CU schools, officials claim. Obana's school and superintendent and mayor urged Illinoisans on Thursday to ask legislators to override Governor Bruce Rauner's amendatory veto of the education funding reform bill approved by lawmakers this spring. The Senate is scheduled to take up Rauner's override on Sunday, and the House is slated to do so as early as next Wednesday. If the governor's veto is allowed to stand, Superintendent Don Owen and Mayor Diane Marlin said it would punish school districts that are located within tax increment finance districts and are subject to property tax caps, like Champaign and Urbana. The article continues on section A6, schools. The state is on the verge of making an historic change in the most inequitable funding formula ever developed in the United States, and the governor vetoed that legislation, and Rauner's changes would actually increase inequities and harm communities like Urbana and Champaign, Owen said on Senate Bill 1. If the state of Illinois is serious about turning around its floundering economy, maybe it should start by investing in the most powerful economic engine imaginable, our students and our public schools. The veto of Senate Bill 1 will punish the public schools located in communities with tax caps and TIF districts, and it could ultimately increase local property taxes, Marlin asserted. The state of Illinois must address the inequity in school funding and uphold minimum funding requirements. And she said that Rauner's veto would threaten TIF districts, which she said are one of the few economic development tools left in our toolbox. Urbana has three TIF districts, Marlin said, and many of their proceeds are used for capital improvements that benefit the city and school children, such as sidewalks and streetlights. While in Urbana on Wednesday, Rauner called the use of TIF districts throughout Illinois a broken system. The governor said that some communities have benefited, but Senator Andy Maynor, the sponsor of the Senate Bill 1, who has been working on a comprehensive change in the school funding formula for almost 5 years, said Thursday that there had been no push by Republicans for changes to TIF districts, property tax caps, or teacher pension plans, pension payments, three issues in Rauner's veto, while the legislation was being developed. I think this is all about the governor's hatred of the city of Chicago, where he believes that there is manipulation happening of TIF districts in the city, Maynor said. But what he apparently doesn't realize is that when a change like that is made in the school funding bill with no research, no data, no understanding of its impact, there is incredible collateral damage all over the state. TIF districts may need to be addressed, he said, but just doing a knee-jerk reaction, blowing something up, and then figuring where the pieces fall is not what a governor ought to be doing. He called the changes irresponsible. And Owen, who said he was speaking with the approval of his school board, warned that without an override of Rauner's veto, some school districts could run out of money within 13 days. What's going to happen if we don't have an override on Wednesday? My colleagues and the families and students that they represent have about 13 days, and then what do they do? And to use students and families as a political pawn is inconscionable, he said. Negotiations on a compromise school funding agreement are ongoing, Maynor said. There are all kinds of conversations happening from Democrats and Republicans in both chambers on how we can do this, right? How do we make sure that we can get this done in the time frame that is afforded to us by the Constitution, he said. One way or another, we're going to get this done. The final lap begins on Sunday in the state Senate. Owen said that without an agreement on school funding, the Urbana School District would run out of money next January, unless the board and administration undertake drastic measures. Although a representative of the Champaign School District was at Thursday's school news conference at Urbana High School, no one from Champaign offered any remarks. Senator Scott Bennett, Democrat Champaign, called SB1 transformative and said that Rauner's veto was clearly intended to hurt Chicago, but the result is a great deal of collateral damage to the schools in Champaign and Vermilion counties that I represent. For the governor's change, every one of my schools is in danger of being hurt. Maynard and State Republican Carol Amance, Democrat Urbana, urged people to call Republican legislators and ask them to override the governor again, like they did last month on budget and tax increase votes. I'm here to ask for downstate Republicans to step forward and do the right thing, Maynard said. They know that this is the right thing to do. I'm here today to ask them to step forward and do the right thing, not just for their school districts, but to do the right thing for the state of Illinois. For the first time in decades, they have the opportunity to be part of this monstrosity of a change for the better for every school district in the state. Proponents of SB1 say that every school district in the state will receive more state aid next year under its provisions. What Rauner is proposing damages school districts across the state. If we are not able to override this veto, we could be facing the worst crisis, even more difficult than our 2.5 years without a state budget. Now going back to page one for another article by Tom Kasich entitled Kickapoo Rail Trail, Phase 1 Almost Done. Public asked to stay off it until after ceremony. The first phase of what eventually will be a 25-mile recreational trail between Urbana and St. Joseph will open August 21st. A ceremony marking the opening of the long-discussed Kickapoo Rail Trail is scheduled for 5:30 p.m. that day on Main Street in St. Joseph, said Dan Olson, executive director of the Champaign County Forest Preserve District. What we'll have is a pretty brief ceremony because most people have told us to get through our thank yous so they can get on the trail, he said Thursday. Honestly, that's what we're hearing. Local mayors have been invited to offer remarks, as has Andrew Kerens, president of the Forest Preserve Board. The 6.7-mile Urbana to St. Joseph segment is the first of four main phases of the project. Next scheduled for engineering work are two segments, one, a short piece in St. Joseph, and the second, a longer part that will take the trail to the Champaign-Vermilion counties line. Olson said that construction of these parts is probably out 2 to 3 years. Engineering and construction of the two Vermilion County sections of the trail has been held up by state budget impasse. Going to continue reading now on page A6. Once completed, the trail will take bikers, hikers, and walkers across 24.5 miles of Champaign and Vermilion counties between East Urbana and Kickapoo State Park. For most of its route, the trail parallels US 150 along the abandoned railroad right of way that 100 years ago was the Big Four Railroad. Olson urged walkers and bikers to refrain from using the trail until the opening ceremony. It's really important for people to stay off it now because we're putting down some stabilizer, calcium chloride that helps the crushed limestone surface bind together, and really people need to stay off that for a 24-hour period, said the Forest Preserve District Director. We've also got a few more signs to put up, so ultimately safety isn't in place yet. I know that there are a lot of people out there and they're using it and we've been asking them not to. It's tempting because it looks good. The Kickapoo Trail, Rail Trail, is owned in part by the Champaign County Forest Preserve District, the Vermilion County Conservation District, and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. The first phase of construction was made possible by federal and state grants and local donations. Going back to page one now, for the next article, entitled Election 2018 Governor's Race, NAACP Chief Joins Hardeman's Ticket. Again by Tom Kasich. Champaign, using a restored band shell where former President Theodore Roosevelt spoke in 1912, T.O. Hardeman and Patricia Avery announced Thursday that they would run as a team for the Democratic nomination for the governor and lieutenant governor in 2018. What we can do right now is make history. Let me tell you how. For the first time, you have an African-American man running for and an African-American woman on the same ticket, Hardiman told a small group gathered at the Bandshell in Champaign's Westside Park. He said he planned to inject some soul power into the Democratic gubernatorial race that includes at least 8 men. It's not about black and white. The people leading this state right now do not have a soul, Hardiman said. Continuing on page A6, the former director of Ceasefire Illinois ran in the March 2014 Democratic Party primary against former Governor Pat Quinn and got 28% of the vote. He won more than 20 counties, including Vermillion. Hardiman got 125,500 votes in 2014 and said he thought he would need more than 300,000 in 2018. He said he hoped to raise at least $500,000 in the campaign. He spent about $34,000 in his race 3 years ago and finished that race with personal loans of more than $30,000. Among his Democratic opponents this time is billionaire investor J.B. Pritzker of Chicago. The thing is, you use the billionaires' money against them, he told his supporters Thursday. People are getting tired of billionaires. We've got to say no to the billionaires. This race shouldn't be about money. Hardiman appeared for the first time Thursday with Avery, who in 2000 made history in Champaign County when she became the first Democrat, first woman, and first African American to become chair of the Champaign County Board. I chose Patricia Avery because I'm concerned about the entire state. Some of the candidates are only concerned about Chicago, so they end up selecting candidates from the same place, said Hardiman, of Calumet City, who said he is an adjunct professor at Governor State University. We have to take a look at Central Illinois and Southern Illinois. Patricia has a proven track record of effective leadership in Central Illinois, and she knows a whole lot of people. The centerpiece of his plan for Illinois, he said, is to raise $20 billion in new revenue over 4 years through a progressive income tax and a business transaction tax on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the Chicago Board of Options, and the Chicago Board of Trade, which he said would yield $3 billion a year. On other issues, he acknowledged some non-traditional positions. He said he is pro-life, supports concealed carry laws, and a $15 per hour minimum wage. Some people don't want to hear this, but I'm non-traditional, he said. The only way you're going to stop killings in the predominantly African-American community, black folks must unify. If black men unify, we can reduce homicides by 80%. We have to unify, he said. I'm pro-life. I have to make that clear to everybody, he said. But I don't think that Medicaid should pay for people to just have abortions at their convenience. And he said he supports concealed carry. The reason I'm saying that is because there is no data that can back up the fact that legal gun owners are part of the violence problem in Illinois, said Hardiman, while adding that he supports ammunition coding. Avery acknowledged that she doesn't agree with all of Hardiman's positions. I don't agree with him on some of those things, but she said. But on those bread and butter issues, we definitely agree on those. She said she doesn't like the direction state government has taken in recent years. I don't like the gridlock, and I think that what really has me empowered and committed to do whatever I can. I might get crushed on the way, but I will keep getting up, she said. Avery said she probably would step down as president of the local chapter of the NAACP, but remain as head of the Champaign-Urbana Project, which describes itself as an agency providing services to at-risk youth and their families. It just looks clean and it makes more sense, she said of the break from the NAACP. This is going to take a lot of time, but I do want to continue my work with the CUAP. That is important to me. I will stay there. I don't think the campaign is going to take all of my time. I want to make sure that I'm still dedicated to the work that CUAP is doing. It was the people that kept those doors open. We lost our state funding. But the people cared enough about the work we do there. And now returning to page 1. This is about the Virginia Theater. entitled UI Expert, Dunkirk Not Totally Accurate, written by Paul Wood. He'll discuss what film got right, wrong at August 20th talk. An expert military historian and will talk about what Dunkirk got right and got wrong about the epic story of British troops trapped on the beach near the beginning of World War II. He'll deliver commentary about the film at the 1 p.m. August 20th showing of Dunkirk at the Virginia Theatre, one of only a handful of theatres nationwide screening the picture in large screen 70mm. John Lynn is a professor emeritus of history at the University of Illinois. He specializes in military history and also served as the Oppenheimer Professor of Warfighting Strategy at the Marine Corps University at Marine Corps Base Quantico. Lynn, whose first scholarly paper was on the fall of France, said Dunkirk gets a lot of things right. It plays with reality, but in an artistic and understandable way, he said. Shot on location in France, Dunkirk tells how more than 300,000 British and French soldiers were evacuated from the beaches and harbour of Dunkirk under fire from German planes. Some scenes are right from history, Lynn said, such as the sinking of British destroyer that took 600 evacuees down with it. But the emphasis on small boats piloted by civilians doesn't tell the whole story, he said. If you take the film literally, you come to the conclusion that every ship of large size was sunk. The article continues on section A5. The mythology of Dunkirk is that the little people saved all the soldiers. Don't forget the Royal Navy was there. A large section of the film is called The Mole. Most of the troops taken off at Dunkirk were taken off the pier, the Mole, Lynn said. In the movie, every large ship that comes up to the Mole is either torpedoed or bombed in the bottom of the sea. You don't evacuate 300,000 men in fishing boats. I don't want to downplay the civilians' great importance, because, among other things, the small launches were able to ferry troops from the beach to bigger ships that couldn't get in so close. He also said the role of the French is largely ignored in holding off the Germans to allow the British to make it to the beaches. The only time you see the French doing that is at the beginning, but they basically held the perimeter so that the British could escape, Lynn said. The British couldn't have gotten off the beaches the way they did without the French. He also said the flight of three Spitfires taking on the Germans while running out of gas had elements of artistic license. Nor does the movie explain why German tanks didn't follow the Brits closely to the beaches on low ground that could have been flooded, he said. Lynn has plenty more to say, but you'll have to go to the matinee to hear it. Film showings at the Virginia are at 7 p.m. August 15th through 19th, and 1 p.m. August 19th and 20th. General admission tickets are $8 at the theatre. In local news now, section B. First article entitled Ex-Nursing Home Official Joins Race. This is for the 104th Illinois House District and is written by Tom Kasich. Cindy Cunningham, formerly the director of the Adult Daycare Unit at the Champaign County Nursing Home and now the owner of a consulting and management business, announced Thursday that she is running for the Democratic nomination of the 104th Illinois House District. The district, which includes parts of Champaign and Vermilion counties, is currently represented by Chad Hayes, Republican Catlin. Hayes announced in July that he will not run for re-election. Mike Maron of rural Fifian, or if it's Fifian, I apologize, has announced for the Republican nomination. Cunningham, 51, of rural Royal in Champaign County, is the owner of Cobalt Creek Consulting and Management Services, a firm that assists businesses that provide home and community-based services for seniors. Article is continued, section B3. She is a 1991 graduate of the University of Illinois and is married and has 3 children. She has never run for public office before. "I've been an advocate for seniors and senior programs for the last 15, 20 years," she said Thursday during a reception at the home of Lori DeYoung, who was the Vermilion County chairwoman of her campaign. "The last 2 years has been just horrible because of the budget cuts and being used as hostages." During the budget impasse, she said, she advocated on behalf of seniors and providers who continued to offer services even while they were not receiving state payment. That led to her serving on the steering committee of the Pay Now Illinois Coalition. "So I'm here because this is nonsense. This is not what Illinois is about. This is not what we are about. We are about doing the best that we can for people who don't have anything. We are about being proud of workers. We don't put our workers down. We don't denigrate them because they have the gall to ask for a salary," Cunningham said. "I'm here because someone needs to stand up and say that it isn't right." She said that she considered running for the House even before Hayes announced his retirement. "I've been thinking about this for a couple of years," she said. Cunningham also is president of the Illinois Adult Day Services Association and is legislative chairwoman of the Illinois Association of Community Care Program Home Care Providers. She said she already lobbies the legislator on behalf of the association and is familiar with the General Assembly. Okay, so we're now on section B2, and this is an area update. Paxton Council discusses lowering speed limit. The City Council discussed lowering the speed limit throughout Paxton from 30 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour. Alderman Rob Steger said residents in his ward wanted traffic slowed on Summer Street, where it borders the baseball and softball diamonds used by the Paxton Swedes of the Eastern Illinois Baseball League and teams from Paxton Buckley Loder High School. City Clerk Gwen Smith said the fast-moving traffic on Summer near where she lives and the absence of sidewalks along that street is a recipe for disaster. City Attorney Mark Miller said he would research how low a speed limit can be pegged in municipalities and what sort of traffic studies need to be undertaken. Steger said he actually would like the speed limit to be 25 miles per hour in the entire town, and no alderman expressed opposition to that idea. Under Steger's proposal, speed limits would remain at 20 miles per hour on Market Street through downtown and on 4th Street by the Paxton Parks District swimming pool. Public Works Director Mark LeClaire said he would research the cost of replacing signs in town. LeClaire said he did not think there were that many to replace. Miller said he would have something prepared for the council to review and possibly vote on at next month's meeting. That piece was written by Carol Thilmany, News Gazette correspondent. The next piece is about Rankin Village Board. Pastor urges village Facebook page, written by Sandy Kofi, Ford County Record. Rankin United Methodist Church pastor Molly Spence Hawke asked the board about starting a Facebook page for the village. The pastor noted that a lot of younger people do not read the newspaper, but they do use Facebook. She said a Facebook page could be used to promote community events and whatever else the board wanted known to the public. There had been a similar page before, but it turned out to be more of a bashing page than a community page. Therefore, some board members had their concerns. The pastor said she would help with a page and suggested board members serve as moderators. Board members agreed that it was okay for her to do this, but that the Facebook page not be affiliated with the village board, but instead be a Rankin community page. Spence Hawke agreed and asked that the board give her any input on or information needed to put on the page. The next piece is about Thomasboro Village Board. Mayor to contact firm about trucks, written by Deborah Rawlings of the Rantoul Press. Concerns about protecting newly resurfaced Main Street prompted the board to agree to contact Premier Cooperative about signs designating a truck route. That would be in lieu of an ordinance restricting vehicle weight. Who would enforce an ordinance? Trustee Kyle Henniger asked. Would we buy scales? Mayor Tyler Evans said elevator management had previously indicated support for keeping grain trucks off Main. He volunteered to make contact with Premier. In another matter, Thomasboro Fire Chief Paul Cundiff raised concerns about out-of-control burning on a property owned by Trustee Tony Grillo. Grillo had given someone else permission to burn there, Cundiff said. He suggested tightening the burn ordinance, which already restricts materials burned to landscape waste. Cundiff suggested limiting the size of burn areas. Police Chief Keith Willis agreed. The police department responded to a fire on the property in April and found embers on neighbor Ken Kocher's property. Kocher also supported a size limit. My shed is next to the property, he said. The next piece, entitled Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, audition for singers set for August 26th. Singers interested in performing with the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, also known as BAC, are invited to audition August 26th in a friendly get-to-know-you 10-minute meeting with BAC's new director, Joseph Baldwin. No preparation is necessary. He will meet those auditioning in the Fellowship Hall of First Presbyterian Church, 602 West Green Street. The audition times will be between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. BAC's repertoire ranges from Baroque music to new works by living composers. The ensemble rehearses from 7 to 9 p.m. Mondays in the Wesley United Methodist Church Choir Room in Urbana. BAC also will host a welcome reception info session at 7 p.m. on Sunday in the Canterbury House Lounge at the Chapel of St. John the Divine, 1011 South Wright Street, C. There, interested singers will meet fellow members of the BAC community and hear from the BAC Board of Directors and Baldwin on BAC's 2017-18 season. As BAC's music director, Baldwin succeeds founding director Chester Chet Alls, who directed the group for 21 years. Baldwin is pursuing a Doctor of Musical Arts degree at the UI. From 2012 to 2015, he served on the faculty at Smith College, where he was the Ivor D. Hyatt Distinguished Assistant Director of Choral Activities and taught full-time. Melissa Murley wrote that piece. The next piece, on B2 also, is entitled Philo Village Board. Trustee Choose Project Contractor, written by Christine Walsh of the County Star. The Village Board has tentatively awarded a contract as a detention basin project in the northeast part of town to a Casey contractor. Muldeen Excavating submitted the lowest of six bids on the project, $218,846. Engineer Dave Atchley's estimate on the cost of the project had been $260,000. Muldeen will receive a notice of award and will have 15 days to get paperwork together. The anticipated finish date is November 17th. The detention basin will include a 100-foot by 240-foot level area, which may eventually be used for parking or a building. The excess dirt from the basin will stay on site, creating a recreational hill on the west side. That's the end of News Gazette Part 1 for today. I'll be